how a disease affects the economy.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in Washington, I'm David Gura, in for David Brancaccio with the global perspective on business and the economy. At five major U.S. airports, the government will screen passengers for Ebola symptoms. In Spain, three more people have been quarantined, and in Texas, Thomas Eric Duncan succumbed to the disease yesterday. As the death toll from the Ebola epidemic approaches 4,000, the World Bank is out with a new report on the economic effects of the virus's spread, estimating the cost could be $32 billion by the end of next year. The BBC's economics correspondent Andrew Walker joins us on the line from London. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning.
So how did the World Bank come up with this figure? What's it taking into account?
In detailed terms, it's initially starting with reports of changes in activity in various sectors across the affected economies. But it's fair to say, I think, that there's an enormous amount of uncertainty associated with these figures. The key thing that the bank identifies is changes in behaviour, people taking action to avoid the risk of infection and the effect that that has on economic activity. If people aren't going to work, farmers have been abandoning their fields, and foreign investors have become increasingly reluctant to make commitments to the affected region.
They have this two-year horizon looking at what the effects could be over the next 2 years. This disease, of course, has already caused a lot of damage economically in countries where this disease is most prevalent. So here we're talking about Sierra Leone and Liberia.
And indeed Guinea as well. And for those three countries, particularly Liberia and Sierra Leone, the scale of the economic impact is really very substantial. There they're looking at, to take the case of Liberia, potential impact on the economy of 12 percentage points of gross domestic product next year. That really is truly enormous and much, much larger than the impact on any of these economies of, for example, the global financial crisis.
Andrew Walker, the BBC's economics correspondent. Andrew, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
And let's do the numbers. The 100 share index in London is up about 0.2%. The DAX in Germany is also up about 0.8%. Dow futures, S&P and NASDAQ futures are all up. Markets were buoyed by the release yesterday of new minutes from the most recent meeting of the Federal Reserve policymakers. Those indicated interest rates probably aren't going up anytime soon. Older Americans still are not saving enough for a comfortable retirement. That is according to a new report from Interest.com, a personal finance site. It's based on that rule of thumb that seniors will need at least 70% of their pre-retirement income when they stop working. Sarah Gardner reports.
According to the survey, seniors in only two places are meeting that income threshold, Nevada and Washington, D.C. Interest.com managing editor Mike Santee credits generous government pensions in D.C. and Nevada. Santee says, think unionized casino workers in Las Vegas.
And union membership tends to mean that they still have traditional retirement plans,
which are disappearing from the private sector and under scrutiny in the public sector, says Michael Finca at Texas Tech.
To fund a $50,000 a year pension for a 65-year-old is going to cost $1 million.
Today's report says seniors are inching closer to meeting that retirement rule of thumb. They now earn close to 60% of pre-retirement income, a big jump from the mid-2000s. But Santee contends that's partly because more seniors are still working. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
How'd you like to cut your cell phone bill, your cable bill, your credit card bills by, say, 10%? Well, it turns out that's possible. According to reporter Nova Sappho, all you have to do is pick up the phone.
Elizabeth Kaufman's monthly cell phone bill is not for the faint of heart.
I support a family on a Sprint plan, and there are about five lines on it, so I spend a lot of money.
About $300 a month, to be exact. Combine that with other bills, and that's been enough to spur Kaufman into action.
We have called both the cable company and the cell phone company because our charges were too high and said we were going to go to another company if we couldn't lower them. In both cases, we were successful.
Successful because while businesses charge as much as they think a customer can pay, they do give discounts to those who ask. And yet, few of us actually do. That's true when it comes to banks, too, as creditcards.com found out in a new survey. Of the mere 23% of customers who called for a deal, most got better interest rates or waived late fees.
That's a little surprising because we know that banks aren't in the business of giving money away for free.
That's Matt Schultz, Schultz. He's a senior analyst with creditcards.com. He says if he's surprised, then it's hard to blame the vast majority of customers who never ask for a better deal.
And that's kind of understandable given that in the depths of the recession, all we saw in the headlines was credit limits being slashed and accounts being closed and all that sort of thing.
But that's in the past. Schultz says banks are competing for customers again. And Tony Giorgiani, a money advisor for Consumer Reports, says in any industry where there's competition, consumers have leverage.
And it costs companies five times as much to acquire a new customer than it does to keep an old one.
Elizabeth Kaufman, whose cell phone bill was $300 a month, found out just how true that is. After our interview, she called Sprint and knocked off another $100 from her monthly bill. In Chicago, I'm Novosoffo for Marketplace.
And 100 years ago, members of a Wall Street men's club buried a time capsule. Historians pored over its contents yesterday. It was filled with newspapers, a telegram. Some New York City students marked the occasion by putting together their own time capsule, and its contents included a Metro card, some hand sanitizer, and tickets to a Lady Gaga concert. In Washington, I'm David Gura with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.